Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 3rd of August, recording at 7:19 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick review of the week, and it's been an interesting one once again. In terms of stock markets, well, after the drama of last week and that selling pressure, we have had some choppy activity in here this week, but with the most stock market indices establishing some form of a short-term low in here so far. And in the government bond sector, let me just finish on stock markets here so far. European markets, they were back towards the lower side of their ranges here today, and Wall Street's been seesawing, it's currently down 80 on the Dow, but it's been down pretty well all day, but rallies repeatedly, but doesn't hold it. Now, long-dated government bonds have been generally quite firm, and they're taking their cue from stock markets, as I've said over and over again, and they're firm in here. Today, the big drama on the day is the U.S. dollar, which has really taken it on the chin here. It didn't like the jobs figures, and the dollar index has slumped back down to 80.267 as I speak. That's down 446 ticks, and now, the dollar had been firm. I think it was firm last week, actually. We had a couple of upward dynamics, and then it had been just sort of hovering in a narrow range for this week until today. And, for instance, we've got the euro back up to 137.89. We've got sterling at 204.30. That's not up as much. Dollar slumped here to 119.29 against the Swissie. And against the yen, the dollar's bit down to 118.60. Okay. And the big development here, let's see, precious metals. They've been sort of quietly steady, but gold has rallied well here today. It's up over $9 as I speak at 674.60. For bullion, and the industrial metals have been mixed this week. Now, nickel is continuing to ease, hasn't yet reached a low. It's such a consistent downtrend, we'll see it when it turns. And we have seen elsewhere the tin, the strong markets here, tin, which is a more recent development in terms of strength, and after a long trading range, and lead, which is getting a retracement rally, perhaps to get back up close to that high up at 3,500. Copper getting clipped a little bit in here today. The grain and bean sector has firmed this week, and I think that's Coffee, the Arabica coffee has been quite steady. And I think those are probably the highlights. Okay, so let's get down to the serious stuff now. What's actually going on here? And I think this is very much a medium-term stock market correction, at least for Europe and probably the USA. I say probably because the percentage decline is small. We haven't gone much over 5% in here. And we've seen a bit more in the European markets, which tend to be sort of a higher beta version of the US in terms of their directional moves. The Asian markets have caught some of the contagion selling, although not China. And I've said it before, and it's a point worth repeating, if any market is going to uncouple in here, it's China, and it has certainly done so, and we had another new all-time high by the mainland Chinese indices. Not quite so firm in terms of the indices that the rest of us can buy quite easily, Chinese indices that is, and Hang Seng and the H shares and so on, but they're not doing that badly either. Now, my feeling in terms of this medium-term correction is that we've seen the worst of it, but I don't yet see any evidence that it's over. And I do, if I harbor a concern here, it is when we saw the medium-term correction in the middle of 2006, and also when we saw that larger reaction in February of this year, those were really sort of reactions occurring in line with short-term overbought conditions, some overextension on the trends. Now, we also had short-term overbought conditions and overextensions on the trends relative to the 200-day moving averages. I'd been banging on about that for quite a while prior to this correction, but there's also a fundamental component in terms of the credit problems emanating from the USA and spreading to some of the other or banks where headquartered outside of the USA, and also some funds headquartered outside of the USA, as you have seen. So, unlike the correction in 2006 and the reaction in February, there is a fundamental component to this move, which means one shouldn't treat it too lightly. This is really a credit problem, I think, rather than a problem of valuations or a problem of interest rates as indicated by long-dated government bonds. And I think the biggest difficulty with this situation right now is the uncertainty. That's what stock markets are reflecting, because investors are just sort of waiting for the next shoe to drop. And when you get an up day in Europe or on Wall Street, people are saying, well, yeah, but surely somebody else is in trouble out there. And there certainly have been plenty of rumors of that going on. And, you know, there's seldom smoke without some fire. So I think a lot of people are concluding that, you know, we're only another hedge fund shock, and I should say shock in inverted commas, and markets can reel again. And that's basically true. Now, we're not going to worry about this for all that long. I think that there is still some additional risk here during this correction. As I said before, I cannot say that it's actually over. But my guess is, as I've already said, that we've seen the worst part of it by far. We may have seen most of it. But when markets do bottom, or are in a bottoming process after this correction, the convalescence may well take a few months. In other words, I don't expect markets to run back up through their highs the way we saw in February. Now, inevitably, there'll be some exceptions. Owen showed some of those Eastern European stock markets that haven't blinked either. They're doing a China. And China will continue to be quite strong, I suspect. And that will lend support in Asia once Wall Street starts going down and people become a little desensitized in terms of the fear of hedge funds or whatever going under. So that means that, you know, we may have an indifferent period in here through August and quite possibly September and even October, before we see markets strengthening again. My view is that most stock markets, if not all stock markets, will be higher at the end of the year than they are right now. I do not think this is a bear market, as I've said repeatedly in here, certainly not with these long-term interest rates, and I don't think the valuations warrant a bear market. Have a look at Mike Leanhoff's report, which is posted today. It's a good one. He's the chief strategist at Brewin Dolphin Securities, and I often post his work. Now, the long-dated government bonds, as long as people are fearful of stock markets possibly getting hit again, then the bond yields are likely to ease a little lower. Bond futures prices push further up into those resistance levels. The bond yields, of course, are nestling in the upper regions of large developing base formations overall. And when confidence does return to stock markets, I would expect bond yields to start moving down. I beg your pardon, bond yields to start moving up again, bond prices to start moving down again. So that will create a short selling opportunity. And I went on to that a little bit too quickly because I really hadn't finished my stock market comments. And that is that I do feel that of the things that I like at any rate, and this would extend to any area where you do see really good value. When I say the areas that I like, you know that's Asian emerging markets, it's the resources markets. I buy into the whole global infrastructure theme, which is led by Asia. Now, the funds that I'm in, and to whatever extent this reaction correction is having an effect, it's creating additional buying opportunities in these markets. And one of my favorites, the China Atlantis Fortune Fund, has come off only a tiny bit in here. Maybe that changes, maybe not. I wouldn't look for a whole lot of pullback there. But some of the other things that I do like have certainly come back a lot. They haven't come back so far or so much as we saw, for instance, in the 2006 correction, where they became mouth-watering bargains. Maybe they come off a little bit more in here. But overall, my point is that any additional near-term weakness is creating buying opportunities. And as I've just said a moment ago, when stock markets show an improvement in sentiment, and we may have to wait, excuse me, until the fourth quarter for that to occur or to become readily apparent, then I think the long-dated government bond yields will be shorts. Got to take a little sip of water All this human frailty, scratchy voice, I can't stand it. Poor listeners having to put up with that. But now, hopefully the voice will hold out in better form. And what about the US dollar? Well, I haven't been looking for anything more than a technical rally. I think the US needs a weak US dollar. It's essential for getting the import revenue that the US is, I beg your pardon, it's essential for getting the export revenue that the US is looking for, and it makes imports a little bit more expensive. So it would help just a little bit on the trade figures. And I do not see any grounds here for a significant rally in the US dollar. Yes, it's back near its historic lows in terms of the US dollar index. But when it got down here first, it was nearly 2 years ago, back down to 80, the 80 level on the US dollar index. At that time, I could talk fairly confidently about it being oversold and due for a reasonably good technical rally. This time, where you could argue that it's oversold in the short term, and indeed I have, but I don't see the big technical rally coming in. I think that the U.S. economic conditions have deteriorated a bit further, certainly, and interest rate differentials no longer favor the U.S. dollar in most instances to the extent that they did previously. In fact, they favor other currencies more often than not. There's no way that the U.S. can raise interest rates in here. And while I've maintained that the Fed would like to keep U.S. interest rates on hold, if push comes to shove, Bernanke will certainly cut rates. What do I mean by push comes to shove? Well, if the economic data turns weak, if we see the stock market get a more meaningful setback of over 10%, that would increase the possibility of Bernanke moving in and cutting rates. But the bottom line here overall is that the dollar's fundamentals are lousy, and that will lead to an eventual downward break beneath this 80 level that I've talked about. And again, I've posted those long-term charts of other currencies, or the dollar against other currencies, and most of those suggest that a major adjustment is underway here. Now, on a very long-term basis, the currencies that I really, really like are the Asian currencies, because many of them are arguably quite cheap, not least the Chinese renminbi. And I would expect I'm in your lifetime, if not mine, we may eventually see parity, rather than the 760 renminbi or whatever it is, something near that level, for the US dollar. So I'm talking on the basis of 20 to 30 years from now, I would expect the renminbi dollar rate to be a whole lot closer to 1 to 1 than what we see today. And I think that China will most likely be the great economic story of this century, and India will be rivaling it all the way in terms of that in terms of that growth potential. Now, in terms of the dollar and this move, and also the yen, another weak currency here. Overall, we know in this environment that no government wants a particularly strong currency right now. And we live in a fiat currency world, and that will result in gold breaking up above this 700 or so resistance level that we've seen over the last many months. And I do expect a surge in the price of gold before year end. I said yesterday in my piece on gold, and if you didn't have a chance to see that and you're at all interested in gold, you might want to read that. But I said this probably wouldn't occur in August. Fatal words here, and we see gold up over $9, as I speak. But that pattern looks like a big, very big buildup of support within a secular bull market that should sustain a move upwards. And yes, of course, European central banks are selling gold. And yes, of course, the Federal Reserve could come out and do some more gold leasing. But, an effort to prevent gold from rising is really not the priority of the Fed in here right now. And inflation is not the priority. Controlling inflation is not the priority for the Fed here right now. What the Fed will be concerned about is making sure that the U.S. economy doesn't slide into recession. And I think it'll succeed in doing that with the help of a weak U.S. dollar. So, precious metals, It's been a long, boring saga since they peaked back in 2006, but the patterns are building up for a resumption of strength. And platinum and silver will certainly be participating there, and eventually palladium as well. Industrial metals, I'd be looking for nickel to form a low fairly soon. I've been saying that for a while, but saying, of course, we take our cue from the charts on this. I still don't see any evidence that nickel has bottomed in here, but the 30,000 level, and it's a little below that now, has always been sort of ballpark region in my thinking for nickel. But as of today, still no evidence that nickel has bottomed, but it's getting interesting. And when that does bottom, that will present another opportunity on the upside, and not only in nickel, but in a number of pure nickel play mining shares, and we'll be covering that for you as and when we see the transition. And tin, meanwhile, certainly an inform industrial metal that looks like it's going to be moving higher. Overall, this is a secular bull market for this for the industrial metals. The oil complex, let's take crude first. Crude is certainly up in the region of last year's highs. That's a natural resistance area in the short term, as I've been saying. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see crude range for a while up here, but then it's going to get another move on the upside. Same old factors, rising demand, supply and elasticity. Yes, OPEC could ramp up production again and drive the price down a bit, but why should they? And I don't think they're going to do that until the price of oil is closer to 100 rather than in the mid to upper $70 region. And agricultural commodities, well, I think where you see the big base formations, you've got them in cocoa, you've got them in coffee, you've got them in cotton. You see them in the grains and beans, although some of those have had pretty good moves overall. But that suggests to me rising floor prices for the agricultural commodities. But they are whippy. They're very choppy overall, and that makes them difficult to trade. You can adopt a buy and hold policy with some of these, but the contangos are so great that that's very, very expensive. It's not like holding a share where you've got a decent yield and you don't mind if it's ranging as long as it's as you're confident in its eventual potential and are deriving a yield. Well, it's just the opposite with these commodities because the contango costs are really quite expensive, and then you have to roll those contracts forward, and they're in the dealing costs. So it's difficult to play those, and I'm not doing that much in that area these days. But I do have some gold. Not as much as I might, largely because I play it through the futures, and we'll be going on holiday as of the 14th of this month to do a little cycling. Well, that's it for another week, folks, and I'll just say have a very, very splendid weekend. Enjoy.